This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
Speaking of intimacy, somebody asked Master Lin Ji, is it okay to tell a joke and get a big laugh? And Master Lin Ji said, sure, if you want to lose trust. So, for some reason, that story has been in my mind for quite a long time. And periodically, it pops into my consciousness, such as it is. And I wonder about it. And so lately I've been thinking about it and wondering, excuse me, you know, if I have, there have been many occasions when I have lost trust in various ways, and if so, how? And also, I was thinking about the record of Lin Ji. And I couldn't remember if there are any jokes in there. Actually, I can't think of any. There are some stories that are somewhat humorous, but they don't involve any displays of humor on the part of Master Lin Ji, as far as I can recall. And yet, Zen and Chan are known for their encoding of humor as a legitimate device for expressing a spirit that it has been freed up. So it's a little odd for Master Lin Ji to say, yeah, go ahead, tell a joke and lose trust. It's kind of strange. So I thought, this must have something to do with the, perhaps there's some cultural significance around the expected demeanor of the head of a community. Perhaps it has to do also with the style of a house and the Lin Ji style, of course, is known to be rather pungent and bitter. Lots of slaps, blows, kicks, shouts, nose twistings, and so forth. So, I don't know, maybe there's not a lot of room for telling of jokes there. Also, there may be some question there about the translation, which I'm not competent to explore. How in Chinese you render lose trust, and whether there are some shades of meaning there that could be examined further. But I must say, sometimes the question comes up whether the behavior of the person who has responsibility for the place of practice has a specific set of behavioral reference that should be consciously borne in mind or not. And I must say, if that's true, I'm not really aware of it. And not so long ago, someone said to me, someone whose opinion I respect, so do you think of yourself as a leader? And I realized, now again, I'm treading dangerously close to yet another Dharma talk about myself, which I am not so comfortable with, but you know, it may be germane to our practice together. So I said, no, I do not think of myself as a leader. And this person said, well, you know, I mean, you kind of are by virtue of your position here. And I thought, well, I suppose, but what does that mean? Well, and this person thought, well, perhaps you should, you know, lead. I thought, well, maybe that means, you know, I should lead from the rear. And so we talked about that a little bit. And so I've been pondering that, and I realized I don't really have any idea what that means, other than to practice with people in the way that I know how, and to do my best to lead an ethical life in the context of my life with others, open to examination, the examination of others, and yes, the criticism of others, difficult as that can be, especially these past 2 weeks. And interesting, as I say that, I get my typical stab of migraine pain in the left hemisphere of my head. This, I'm sure, is no accident. But that's the only, I really don't know anything about leading besides that, you know. So it's, you know, share my practice with other people and respond to questions, and obviously make mistakes and hang around to clean up the mess. If I make a mess, that's all I know about. So if there's more to leadership, then well, maybe I need to go to leadership school or something, in which case, okay, I guess I could do that, although I'm not eager to do so, but if that's something that needs to be done, well, I'd be surprised, but, you know, I could think about doing that. Where this touches upon the, you know, kind of topic for the talk was this notion of kind of naturalness. And that's where this touches upon Linji's remark. It's like, I'm thinking like, well, Linji, why are you such, you know, why are you so stuck up that you can't make a joke? And how does that lose trust if people laugh at something that you say? It's like, I don't get it. So, well, maybe in the context of that bitter, severe house, it does. But this prompted me to look at Sukhareshi's talk and then my beginner's mind about naturalness. And the point he makes about how that's an issue for us. Because there's a couple of ways of looking at it. And one is, first of all, you know, he gave that talk in like 1960-something. Probably about when I was starting to sit, or maybe a little bit before. And there he was over in the Zendo on Bush Street. And these various unwashed types were walking in to the Zendo, Westerners, which I think at first surprised him. You know, very unbathed and probably aromatic, and barefoot, with dirty feet, and ignoring the fact that there's actually a kind of boundary between the Zendo and the life outside. And they were just kind of like, what? What boundary? And they were climbing onto the zafus with their grubby feet and just plunking themselves down. And this was, to them, natural. And he realized, oh, this isn't what we mean by natural. This is, he recognized there's a Japanese expression that's means kind of like sloppy natural, or anything goes natural, which is sort of not what we mean by that. And there's another kind of natural, which is sort of like the natural that you come to when you find your own true way natural. And the difficulty or the challenge for us is that for some reason seems to take some work, which is really a paradox. How could it possibly take work for us to find our own true natural way? So this sloppy way, interestingly, is a longer Japanese expression, which, because I no longer have a brain, I can't remember. But part of the expression is gedo, which appears in Japanese Buddhism a lot, and it means outside the way. And in fact, one of the five kinds of Zen is known as gedo Zen. So that's the kind of Zen that you know. Not to badmouth people too much, but you know, people like certain Christians, excuse me, might practice Zen because they might feel it brings them closer to Jesus or something. They would, from the Buddhist point of view, they might call that Gedo Zen. It's like outside the way. So this sort of naturalness is that's kind of sloppy, anything goes. They call that kind of Gedo naturalness, outside the way. But the naturalness that is paradoxically cultivated, the inside the way, is the kind that you kind of have to study somehow. Because it has to be unencumbered with our ideas about naturalness. And that's where the work somehow comes in. So, Tsukiyoshi says, for instance, if you're really sleepy, you might take a nap. That's perfectly okay. But then he said, but if you take a nap because you think, well, by God, I deserve a nap, so I'm going to take a nap now. And as I was looking at that, I suddenly thought, I often do that. I often think, God damn it, I deserve a nap. I'm going to take a nap now. Whether I'm actually sleepy or not, I shall damn well lie down and take a nap and turn my sign around on my door that says, bug off. And I realize, oh, I think that's what he's talking about. I have some idea, some baggage that says I shall take a nap. This is maybe not so natural. So he's not so much saying you mustn't do that. He's saying this is the kind of study where we see the difference between maybe a sort of contrived naturalness and the actual naturalness that's more like how a plant, a seed, sprouts and emerges through the ground, just seeking the light and the water. more like the naturalness that can emerge from our practice, where in this cultivation of sitting still, a lot of this baggage falls away. And our own true way doesn't so much emerge, but is allowed to be seen just as it is by itself. Maybe from that, some sort of, true humor can emerge, of a sort that maybe won't lose trust. So maybe Master Linji was talking about, some kind of humor that can abuse or lose trust, whereas there's a kind that doesn't. Maybe he was talking about a kind of humor that perhaps was at someone else's expense. Gratuitous humor. Maybe that kind loses trust. The koan, or story, doesn't elaborate. But today, anyway, that's my guess. Oh, yes?
I was wondering if it might be helpful to put alongside what you're saying. This is difficult because not everybody has reminiscences of Isan, but in many situations he would do what some might consider a joke, but which everyone immediately perceived was a very deep teaching occasion.
Yeah.
And I think instead of leading, the key part in there is probably teaching, and then it expands all out. You don't just teach when you're here. You teach when you go from the kitchen to the dining room and people watch how you do that. Seems like teaching would kind of get a lot of those elements that are good, but keep away some that are authoritarian or...
So there's a lot of dimensions to leading, perhaps. And maybe the best kind of leading is quite natural. So I don't know, maybe that takes a lot of time and cultivation. And I'm not even 61 yet. So, I have more work to do. But bear in mind, men in my family don't necessarily live so long. So, maybe if I make my apologies now, that may be sufficient. It may have to be sufficient. Anyway, so some of those hippies with their dirty feet washed their feet and took a bath and set themselves to kind of study this other sort of naturalness that Tsukiyoshi seemed to be talking about, and seemed to get the picture and went on to study that, and it seemed to help their lives quite a bit. And some of that other baggage, which seemed to consist of ideas about naturalness, dropped away. And they seemed to feel lighter in their lives as a result. So I think that's in part what's meant by studying the self. And what's meant by forgetting the self, since the self is essentially nothing but baggage. And I was struck again today in our practice by how, I was going to say true, but that's tendentious, how worthwhile it is to study and study and study the lack of difference between person and experience, and how that is the direction in which the end of suffering lies. Now, I am not going to claim any achievements in that direction, but I am going to claim that that is the direction in which the end of suffering lies, and urge us all to continue that study indefinitely. And, you know, tell jokes about it if you want. It's hard for me to see that that is going to damage anyone's trust. And you know, if we want to talk about you know, leadership and so forth, we should do that. And talk about precepts and ethics, I think we should do that. I wish there were more of us here to share this conversation, but with the help of certain technical experts, we can put this talk on the web and more people will hear it, and broaden the conversation that way.
A thought yes. came to me. The way I would look at what you're suggesting is maybe as a group, you know, it's like a puzzle, and each one of us is a piece of that puzzle. Mm-hmm. But in the process of trying to fit myself into that puzzle, maybe there's a little edge here or there that doesn't quite allow me to put that piece in properly. Mm-hmm. And maybe that this little edge here or there has to be sanded down a little bit so that I can fit into the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I see my own way of okay, so for me, certain things may be natural, but they may not they may not quite fit the occasion or the group in general. And I work on it a little bit to, so that I can fit in. But that doesn't mean I'm abandoning my naturalness. I'm just kind of fitting in with the group naturalness.
Mm-hmm. And so you do that by coming to join the group, which I greatly appreciate. It's hard for hermits to have that experience. So, you know, people often use that the image of the rocks in a tumbler. And that experience is not always pleasant for the individual rocks. But often what comes out is quite beautiful. And yet it's also, it can be slow. Rather slow. In fact, if it's too fast, it can be almost violent. And that's... I wouldn't recommend that. In this respect, you know, our practice is both extremely natural and, of course, quite unnatural. Sitting in stillness and silence is as natural as a seed in the ground, and also very peculiar. I think we all know that. And yet its naturalness is of the sort that can't be grasped easily, and I think that's what draws most of us back to it over and over again. we keep meeting our own intimate way over and over again. Doctor, you look pained.
Yes, a bit. I think it's, well, I mean, I wonder if Lin Chi's response was along the lines of, if you have to ask me, it doesn't matter whether you tell a joke or you don't tell a joke. Because you are not yet sufficiently in touch with your naturalness even to be able to make that level of decision. So there isn't really any leadership school. So the idea of coming and tumbling with the rocks, and the rock is choosing which tumbler it wants to be in the specific circumstances, you know, in which it wants to be tumbled. That seems a little unnatural.
Unnatural?
Yeah.
Could be.
We're operating within a bigger context than that.
Well, some of us may need that sort of limitation, and some not. There may be some karma operating there. Some of us Catholics. I don't know. Now, looking back, you know, as Dogen says, you may not see much. You may see only, as he says, drifting white clouds for 10,000 miles. But from the perspective of a neurotic 19-year-old, which I was, that's not how it looked to me. I really thought I needed a tumbler. So that's where I went. Now I'm not sure what I was looking at. But at the time, I really thought, nope, put me in that tumbler. Slam the door, leave me there. Now, I don't know. But if I had to do it over again, I probably would. when you sit, if you do, you know, remember, it's not necessary to bring anything with you. The posture, as it were, speaks for itself. Suzuki-roshi recommends just leave everything outside. It's funny to say we can't enjoy, because that implies, oh, there's a we enjoying everything that's going on, which of course is not right. There's no difference between the enjoyment and the we. It's the same. But to just be the incredible flexing of the self is quite extraordinary. That's all there is. The self is nothing but flexing. In the context of this amazing universe, that's all there is. There isn't anything else. And to study the self is simply bearing witness to that. Even though there is no one bearing witness. And I almost said, if you do that, but there's no you. So doing that for a long, long time, the stream of life changes irrevocably. And I promise that is true. Yes?
I was just thinking about like different things I've read or heard about the idea of doing the right thing whenever the occasion arises.
The appropriate response.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think various people have said you will know what to do if you practice long enough, if you have some embodiment of enlightenment, the right thing will present itself and you will do it. Or people have said, you won't ever know what to do in every situation. It's just not, I mean, and I kind of think that makes more sense to me, although I think the other perspective might just be kind of have faith kind of incitement to continue in practice. Yeah. But I wonder if it's actually just, instead of doing the quote unquote right thing, if it's actually just doing what's natural, what's most inherently natural without the preconceived notions of what that should be.
Well, I think it's more like that. I don't, from my own experience, I wouldn't say that knowing has much to do with it. It's not so much that you will know what to do. Something will happen. And sometimes it will seem like, yeah, that was right. And sometimes it may seem like, oh, no, that wasn't right at all. Whether history will judge that as the appropriate response or not remains to be seen. But the feeling of having acted from some integral place of your own being will be there. Right? And not so much whether, yes, this is the appropriate response. That's kind of irrelevant. You will just be acting from your own quiet heart. That's all.
And the right thing, that is an idea itself.
That's just an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was also thinking that in many cases that I've heard and seen myself, humor can definitely be a part of what is most natural, what's the most natural response to a situation, and what is most appropriate.
Yeah, I agree.
And maybe that's why we do Soto and not Rinzai.
Well, maybe, and maybe Larry's right, that Linji was actually speaking to that particular person who was like, you know, and he was saying, well, what are you asking me for, you twit? You know, if the question is already coming from kind of a warped place, so bug off. Well, who knows, you know? Various flavors of posterity have interpreted that scenario, that story in various ways. So who knows? And humor, in one way or another, is a part of my experience and character, and I'm not going to try and get rid of it. My only hope is that if people feel like I've damaged their trust, they'll say so, and they don't always. And that's my sorrow. Now you're smiling, Doctor. Is that a good sign?
It's just that before I was... No.
Yeah, just that before you were looking pained.
Well, the Linji story, the next question would make me think about an Epictetus story.
Yes.
Very respected Stoic.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, maybe about 1,000 years before
he's
Dogen.
Dead, but anyway.
Yeah, so is Dogen.
Yes, so is Dogen.
And one of the... Yeah, so I was surrounded by students asking questions. At one point, one of the other philosophers was considering... So Nero was the emperor, and he used to have these circuses. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to advance your career, you basically had to make a fool of yourself by performing in Nero's circuses. So this philosopher says to Epictetus, you know, I'm considering dancing in Nero's circuses. And Epictetus says, well then, if you're thinking about it, you should do it. And the philosopher says, oh, but you, Epictetus, do not dance in Nero's circuses. And Epictetus says, well, for me, the question does not arise.
Nero was pretty creepy. Yes.
Thinking of Linji's story is almost thinking that the student was asking, can I tell the story to get the big laugh? So he's setting up that he has this attachment and an expectation if I'm telling a story or I tell
and
a joke
laugh.
And laughing happens.
That's a good point.
But he's aiming somewhere, so it seems like the aim is false.
That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
And it was making me think the other day I was at a place doing something. No names will be named, but it was a place that had taken on a branded experience, we'll say. And it just felt so inauthentic.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to, who who are you? How is this? What is this place? You know, it like, felt like, okay, so I get that you've sort of co-opted this thing, but it doesn't feel real. You know, it was unmoored.
So that was a question of authenticity.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's two new perspectives, one from you, one from Larry, on this koan. Thank you very much, which I hadn't thought of. Excellent. Okay.
And it seems that maybe in our language that like naturalness and authenticity could be the play of words that might meet the needs of the Japanese.
Yeah. The cultural matrix has changed a little bit from Suzuki Roshi's time to now. It's been a while since anybody came in here with, you know, wearing bells and dirty feet. I haven't really noticed that happening.
<That's really>